Isaiah chapter 42. We'll be talking about the servants of God. And I know that all of us as Christians were taught very early in our Christian walk to repeat, like parrots, that we want to serve God. And it's good to want to serve God. Some people take it a little farther than it should by wanting to be set on fire for God. I have no particular desire to be set on fire for any reason. And I suspect God doesn't want to burn me up either. But see, we learn how to say all those things that we should say, and people always tell me, I want to serve God. Well, if you do, I know why you do. Because you have a real delivery problem if you want to serve God. He's a long way away. So you're safe when you say, oh, I want to serve the Lord. You got no way to get, and besides, what does he need from you? I'm going to show you this evening how you can serve God, and you don't have to deliver anything. It'll come to you, and it'll be so easy you can do it every day, and then you'll have to find another reason why you don't serve God. But first I'm going to tell you, in reality, there's two ways or two services available to us. Obviously, there's people like myself, we've been called to serve God in this capacity. And then there's individuals like yourselves who have been called to serve God also, but in a different capacity. But nonetheless, we're all here to serve God. Let's talk about the first servant first. Isaiah 42:1. It says, behold my servant. Now, before we go any further, it is obvious to me that you're all facing a particular direction for a particular reason. It is equally obvious to me that I am facing in an opposite direction also for a particular reason. So it stands to reason that we're both beholding God's servant. Now, I have no problem looking at you and seeing God's servant, but why you do is beyond me. But let me show you why maybe you do. First of all, he says, behold my servant, so all of you are looking at me, or should be. So first of all, the Lord is saying, the first thing that will happen, I'll put my servant in your face, not at your back and not at your side. Now everyone other than me is either at your side, left or right, or at your back. Some of them are at your front with their back toward you, but the only ones you can behold right now and face to face is yours truly. So he says, behold my servant whom I uphold, mine elect. In other words, God put me here and God's going to keep me here, and I don't need your permission, I don't need your approval, and I don't need your thank you. And he says on top of that, he says, since I uphold him and he's my elect, I put him there, my soul delighteth in him. Now what do I care? After an introduction like that, how could I possibly care what you think of me? Now he said, I have put my spirit upon him. So you see, God says, I'm his servant. Now let me tell you what a servant is. It comes from a Hebrew word that means bondservant, or one who works and one who serves, one who does service. A bondservant is a person bound to service without pay, or very little thereof. It's one who serves. You see, serve means to aid and to assist and to help. Now, are you starting to get the drift here? What could I possibly do to help God? How could I possibly assist him? And how could I possibly help him? How could I aid God, first aid or otherwise? So it's obvious that in order to be a servant of God, you must be a server of someone else, because I'd have a horrendous delivery problem if God wanted me to help him and to assist him and to aid him. Service also, or serve, means to carry out the duties connected with a position. In order for me to be a servant of God, I have to carry out the duties connected with this position. In order for you to serve God, if you're a spiritual head, you've got to carry out those duties. If you're a wife, you've got to carry out those duties. As parents, you've got to carry out those duties, or you're not serving God. See, there's no way that you can do service to God and not carry out the duties of your position. And we all have a position. Serve also means to offer food in a certain way in order to meet the needs of. Now, God has no desire or need for me to feed him. But we have a need to be fed by him. And he needs to have someone to come and serve it to you. So you see, in order to work for God, in order to be a servant of God, in reality, what I have to do is carry out the duties connected with this position. I have to offer the food in a certain way. In other words, I've got to do it God's way, or I'm not serving God, I'd be serving you. The word servant also means to work. And work means to expend physical or mental effort in order to get something done. So you see, I got to think and work. Now, God's too far away, and he's smarter than I am. He doesn't need my help, so I got to help you with your thinking and working. So you see, that's the same responsibility you have within your families. He said, I want you to carry out the responsibility of your position. And yeah, it's going to take some physical and mental work. There's times you're going to have to do some reading. There's times you're going to have to think about what you're doing. And there's times you're going to have to turn off your TV set to do the physical work of getting your kid by the back of the head and taking him to the corner and say, here's where I want you. It does take some physical work. But God says, my servant, the one who carries out the position of the office that I've given him, I uphold. In other words, let me tell you something. As long as you carry out the position and the functions of your position, God will uphold you. It doesn't matter what your husband or your wife or your children think of you. It doesn't matter what you think of me, because God upholds me. Why? Because he said he's mine elect. I'm the one that put him there. He's the one that gave you your children. He's the one that gave you the job you have. He's the one that gave you the wife you have. And you'd say, well, why would God do such a thing to me? Because you didn't admit what you were, so he sent you someone to show you who you were by acting just like you. He also wanted you to know you hate your mother and your grandma. Quote, grandma. So you see, God says, the servant, this one behind the pulpit, the one that I uphold, the one that's mine elect, the one that my soul delighteth in, he said, I put my spirit upon him. So the servant always has the spirit of God upon him. Now, what is that spirit of God? It's in the last part of the verse there. It says, he shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. See, the functions connected with this office is to bring judgment to you. Now, I know some of you don't like it, but that's too bad. I got to do my job. In order for the Lord to uphold me, in order for him to delight in me, and in order for me to show the spirit that he's given me, I've got to bring judgment to you. He shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. Judgment means to judge and to pronounce sentence for or against. The word judgment means the following. My servant will litigate, condemn, and defend. Now, you know, this is a tough job when you think about it. Here is the job of God's servant. Number one, I've got to litigate. And all of you have problems. You're fighting with yourselves. You're fighting with each other. You fight with me. You're fighting with God. You're fighting at work. Man, there's a whole lot of fighting going on. And the Lord says, I prefer that you don't punch each other out. Let's go to court. We need a judge here. See, so the first thing we have to do as a judge, as a servant of God, it's my job to litigate. And litigate means to contest in a lawsuit. In other words, I've got to sit down and listen to both sides and then render a judgment. And the reason you're being sued is you're being charged with being a sinner. You're being accused of being wrong by the accuser of the brethren. So would you rather be judged by him or by a man of God? So the first thing I have to do is litigate. I have to sit down and listen to both sides. And then the next part, and it's always this way, I have to condemn. Why? Because you're both wrong. You're both wrong. Neither one of you is right. So the second part of the litigation always is to condemn. Condemn means to pass an adverse judgment on. And I know people would like to hear, oh, you're wrong and you're so wonderful. No, my job is to condemn. Condemn means to disapprove of strongly. It doesn't make friends for me. But it's part of the job. It's the function of the office. Condemn means to declare to be guilty of wrongdoing. Condemn means to convict, to declare someone unfit for use. You're unfit for use. My job to condemn you. It's my job to pass an adverse judgment on you, to disapprove of you strongly, declare you to be guilty of wrongdoing, to convict you and tell you you're unfit. You're unfit to be a father. You're unfit to be a wife. You're unfit to be a child of God. You're just unfit. You're a jerk. And I say, well, that's not too bad, Lord. And he says, now comes the third part. Now you defend him. Oh, come on, Lord. I'm the one you told me to tell him how bad. That's right. But you see, most of you get upset at the condemnation part. You never let us get to the defense part. Because see, the minute you accept the condemnation and you understand you are wrong and you agree, now it's time for grace. Now all of a sudden, my whole function changes. Now I have nothing to do but defend the very thing we agreed was wrong. Some of you are missing that point so sadly. You'll only see me as the individual who's always so technical. He's always talking about words, and it's like being in a court of law. You got it. You bet you bippy it'll always be that way. Well, all I hear is negative stuff from him. We're always wrong. He's always pointing out your faults. Right again. And that's where most of you get upset and leave. That's where most of you don't want to talk anymore. That's where the counseling falls apart. Because you want me to be like your mother. You want me to nurse you. You don't know the third part of this judgment that God asked me to bring as a servant. Now he says, now that we've got him convicted and condemned and they know what's wrong with him, now he turns around and says, now defend him. Defend means to guard from attack. You see, the problem with you is you've already condemned yourself. That's why you drink, that's why you smoke, that's why you dope, that's why you're angry, that's why you're condemning yourself. You've passed sentence on yourself. So see, we're both in agreement. You're dumb. And you're guilty and you deserve what you're getting. We're in agreement. And now here's where we part company, where I say, you shouldn't have that. And you say, oh yes, I should. You see the irony of what we're talking about here? We're in agreement that you're guilty. But I don't agree that you ought to punish yourself. So you see, you already understand how wrong you are, and you argue with me and tell me you're not wrong. But you know you are because you're acting wrong. And then you start abusing yourself to make amends for that wrongness that you said you didn't have, that you argued with me against. And then when I sit down and talk to you and say, brother, you shouldn't do that. God loves you, and you can say no to that. Sister, you can stop that. You argue with me on that, too. So you see, you get mad in the condemnation, but you also get mad at the defense. However, there's not a person sitting here that hasn't said at one time, oh, I'll never make it. I'm no good. There's no sense trying. I can't help it, and that's all there is to it. You condemn yourself no end. The problem is you're pitiful defense attorneys. So you see, now it's my job to defend the very thing I try to get you to admit. Defend means to guard from attack. That's to guard you from attacking yourself. To guard you from attacking each other. Like a pack of wild dogs. Sometimes I have to throw hot water on you to separate you. For whatever reason. Defend means to keep from harm or danger. You know, it's amazing that the hardest battle is to keep you from doing to yourself that harm for the thing you said you didn't do wrong in the first place that I said you did wrong. What amazing people that we are. Defend means to protect. It means to support, to maintain, or to justify. So you see, if we could ever get past the condemnation part, which is necessary, we'd get to the defense part. And then I'd be able to help you, and the Lord wants to guard you from you. He wants you to keep from harming or danger from yourself. He wants to protect you from you. Defend also means to act as a lawyer for the accused. You see, the problem is you don't need an advocate because you say there's nothing wrong with you. However, you're killing yourself every day in the way you act, the way you eat, the way you talk, what you drink, how you do it, how much of it you do. You're killing yourself. You're on death row already. And I'm trying to act as a lawyer for the accused, but you won't let me. Defense also means to make a defense. So you see, the function of the office is to first get you in a technical situation where we talk about the law, where we talk about what you're accused of, which you know is true. And then my job is to condemn you, to tell you that you're disapproved of and that you're unfit, and then turn around and tell you how much you're loved and how God can make you fit for his service. It's a paradox, isn't it? So you see, God says, as my servant, you must do the job of the office. And most people sitting in this room right now don't like it. They tell me how to do my job through third parties, but they can't even do their own. Now, who does the servant serve? The servant of God doesn't serve God. God doesn't need your help. The servant of God makes a judgment and does something for God's people. And you'll find who he serves and how in verse 16. Who does the servant serve? The blind. He said, and I will bring up the blind by a way that they knew not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them. So see, the first thing he says, I'll bring the blind in a way that they knew not. Now, blind people say, well, I have 20/20 vision. Yes, you do, but you're still blind. Because you see, blind means to have a thin veil, a haze or a blur over the eyes, like a cataract. It means to make things hazy or indistinct. It also means anything hazy or indistinct to the sight or the mind. In other words, when a person says, well, I just don't quite understand that, you're blind. I don't quite see it clearly, you're blind. Don't quite understand that, you're blind. So you see, God says, all those that are blind, I have to bring by a way that they knew not. I have to lead them in paths they have not known. I have to make the darkness light and the crooked things straight. Now, where are these paths that you do know? You learned them at home. God says, I have to send you in paths now that you don't know. Who taught you the way you do things? Your parents. He says, I have to bring you in a way that you know not. Who gave you darkness? Why don't you see? Your parents. He says, I have to change that darkness for light. And I have to make those crooked things straight. So he says, first of all, I bring the blind. That's my job. And he says also, I do not forsake them. Says, these things will I do unto them, and I will not forsake them. So he's the servant of God, never forsakes the blind. Never. And I know they don't know what they're doing. They don't know where they're going. They don't know where they've been. They don't know how to get there. They don't even understand where they are. They don't even know what time it is. And I know that it's hard, but God said, I'll never forsake them. So you can tell the servant of God because he never forsakes. Forsake means to relinquish, to let go for a price, to sell or to trade, to give up or to abandon, to renounce. God will never renounce you. The servant of God will never renounce you. Men, listen to me. When you think the answer is divorce, you're no servant of God. You're servant of your own body. When you think the answer is separation from the church, or when you have better things to do than come to church, you're relinquishing. You're forsaking. And God says, whether you were here or not, my servant was here. I was here. I spoke anyway, whether you were here or not. And for those of you that were here that weren't here, now you can hear. Some of you that are here right now that aren't here, you hear about it later. But everybody's going to hear. Hear, hear. I'll go for that. He says, I'm never going to renounce you. Renounce means to give up a claim or right by a formal public statement. I've heard people renounce each other. Oh, I'm leaving out of this place. I ain't done. I'm not sticking around here. You just made a formal statement of renunciation, you dummy. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if I never see her again, it'll be too soon. You've just renounced again. You'll never find God doing that. Renounce also means to refuse further association with. Look at the empty pews, all the people that have renounced further association. But I thank God, as one slot is empty, two more come in to take their place. He said, I'll also never disown you. The servant of God will never disown you. Disown means to refuse to acknowledge as one's own. In other words, what God is saying, the servant of God must understand that he's dealing with deaf, blind people that don't know where they're going. They don't know how to get there. They're in darkness and they're crooked. Besides being deaf, dumb, and blind. Now he says, now servant, he tells me, the only way that you can serve, you must understand, you've got a bunch of people out here that are deaf, dumb, and blind. And I accept that. Now some of you don't like that, but I'm going to tell you again. You are deaf, you are dumb, and you are blind. Now let me tell you what that means, because God doesn't want to leave you out in the dark so you can try to figure it out for yourself. I'm going to tell you what it means. Isaiah 42:18. He then says, hear, ye deaf, and look, ye blind, that ye may see. In other words, in order for you to see, in order for you to understand, you have to hear, look, and then you will see. Now, the first thing he says, hear, look, and see. That's the only way you're going to get this message. You must hear, look, and see. I'm going to prove to you why you're deaf, dumb, and blind. Hear means to hear with attention, to hear intelligently, and to hear with obedience. In other words, if you don't pay attention, you're not going to hear intelligently, you're not going to obey. So he says, you have to hear in order to look. He says, hear ye deaf, and look ye blind. Now what does the word look mean? It means to look intently at and to scan. Now, I know that you have owned the shoes that you have for a long time, and the feet even longer. What is so interesting on the floor, I do not understand. Sometimes I figure I should give you all hats when you come in, with little cartoons on the top of them, so I could have some fun. See, I see the top of your heads more than anything else. Some of you constantly look like you need a shave because I never see your face. I never see your eyes. I just see the top of your heads. He says, you've got to look intently at the servant of God. You've got to scan. Keep your eyes. Because if you don't look, you'll never hear. You'll not be able to see. Now, what does it mean besides look intently at and keep your eyes on? It means, look means to regard with pleasure, with favor or care, to have respect for. In other words, he says, you have respect for my servant. I have respect for you. And God knows I know enough about you that I shouldn't. And I've confessed more than enough about myself that you shouldn't either. So he said, in order for you to hear intelligently, in order for you to hear with attention, in order to hear with obedience, you've got to look intently at and have respect for the servant of God. Works both ways. You know as well as I do that when you want to talk, when you call, when we get together, I hear with attention. I hear every word that you say. And I give you definitions of every word, and you try to sneak them in here and sneak them in over there, but I'm hearing with attention. You're not getting away with that. You always, none of you like this when I say, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. That word that you used means this. Good grief, you're so tech. I'm hearing with attention, partner. And that's why I hear intelligently, and that's why I hear with obedience. And I look at you. I have respect for you, you know that? And I have favor for you, and I care about you. And he says, now you have to hear, look, in order to see. Now the word see means to approve, to discern, and to take heed. Now it is important that you approve. Because without approving, you cannot discern and you can't take heed. Now why does God want you to see? The last three parts of the definition means in order to show self and to advise self by letting self see. In other words, you know what this finally means? My job is to convince you of the truth of this so that you can say, I see that, I understand that, and I approve, and I have shown myself. I show myself, I agree with that. I now advise myself that I'm going to do what I've heard. That's good advice. See, it isn't something that you just blindly do just because I said it. Anybody that's blindly doing anything is not only deaf, dumb, and blind, they're stupid too. God doesn't want you to be stupid. He says, I want you to see this. Why? So you can show it to self. So that you can advise self. Because you see, that's the only way you're ever going to do it. No one ever come and stopped your car on the street corner and dragged you out of there and said, you're going to smoke this thing whether you like it or not and have a shot of this and I don't care what you say. They put signs all over and they say, come on into Marlboro country. And then they tell you, have a shot of this and it doesn't get any better than that and this is Michelob. The night belongs to Michelob. I don't know what you belong to, fool, but the night can have Michelob and vice versa. But you see, what they do is they convince you so that you can make a decision and say, I want to do that. That looks good to me. I've decided to do that. Well, that's the way God operates. The only thing is, this is a commercial you cannot turn off. And I thank God we've only got one bathroom. Sum total of this thing is, I must understand that you can't hear, you can't look, and you can't see. You're deaf, dumb, and blind. So see, I have to understand the pitiful condition that you're in. I have to understand, my God in heaven, what a pathetic group of people. They're deaf, dumb, and blind. And the Lord says, give it to them, because it's true. You're deaf, dumb, and blind. Now comes verse 19 that personally I'd have thrown out. It says, who is blind but my servant? Or deaf is my messenger that I sent? Who is as blind as he that is perfect and blind as the Lord's servant? In other words, he says, now that you finish them, I'm telling you, you're worse. Haven't I always told you that? He says, you're right. I'm telling you, these people are deaf, dumb, and blind. But now I want to tell you something else. Who is blind as my servant? Or deaf as my messenger? In other words, what God is really saying here, in order for you to understand their plight, you must understand yours. You must understand that you're worse. And why am I worse? Because I'm up here. How could I have sympathy and pity and a desire to help you out of your situation if I couldn't understand it? He says, who is blind but my servant? Servant, again, means the same thing as bondservant in the first part of the message. The one that's upheld, The one that we said all those good things about. Now here it is. Who is blind but my servant? And then he goes a step further and he says, or deaf is my messenger. Now, if I recall back in verse 1 here, he says, behold, my servant, who I have held, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth, I put my spirit upon him. He shall bring judgment to the Gentiles. And then we learned later on that you are blind. But now he's telling, now he turns on me and he says, and you're deaf. You see, you're blind. But he says, they're deaf, but you're worse. Nobody's as deaf as my messenger. Nobody's as blind as my servant. But he also said something very interesting. Besides being deaf and blind, and let's deal with deaf first. He says, there's nobody as deaf as my messenger. Deaf means literally or spiritually deaf. But it also means something else. To be deaf as an accompaniment of dumbness. In other words, my Father in heaven is saying, Reuben, you are deaf, dumb, and blind. And there's nobody as deaf as my messenger. Messenger means a prophet, a priest, and a teacher. So in order for you to be a servant of God, you must be deaf, dumb, and blind. Thanks a lot. And thank you, Lord. Because you know what this means, if you think about it. Deaf, dumb, and blind. Hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. In other words, I never look for wrong in you, and you know it. I wait until you bring it to me. Then I have a right to judge it. But I never go looking for it. As wrong as whatever's going on, there's not a person here that can say I've ever called them and said, what's wrong? You can be gone a week, 3 weeks, a month, 10 years, and I'll never will I call you, because I respect you. Besides that, I'm deaf, dumb, and blind. I didn't know you were gone. Didn't miss you. Well, how could a blind person? I don't see. Whoever's here is here. So you see, the servant of God hears no evil, sees no evil, and speaks no evil. And I'll tell you, there's some real benefits to being deaf, dumb, and blind. Because look what it says. Who is blind as he that is perfect, and blind as the Lord's servant? In other words, if you are deaf, dumb, and blind, if you hear no evil, if you see no evil, if you speak no evil, you're perfect. Now, every time that I talk to a family, it's because someone is hearing, seeing, and speaking evil about somebody else. Or they'll come and they'll hear and speak and see evil in themselves. Or they'll come and tell me what they think is wrong with me. But you see, what it boils down to is they're hearing, seeing, and speaking evil. And it'll cost you the perfection. It says, who is blind as the one who is perfect? Nobody is as blind as the perfect person. So the blinder you are, the more perfection that you have, and the more you can be the Lord's servant. It is important to know what it's costing you to hear, see, and speak evil. And I don't care if you do it about yourself, about somebody else, about me. I don't care who you're speaking evil about. It's costing you perfection. And yes, I'm perfect. Thank you. And I'm going to show you now what perfect means. It comes from a Hebrew word that means safe. It means to be safe in mind, to be safe in body, and to be safe in estate. In other words, everything you have works right. Everything you have is paid for. Everything is serving you. It's all safe. Perfect also means to be completed. You have everything that God wants for you. Perfect also means to be friendly. Now that's hard in a group like this, you know it? And you know it as well as I do. But if you weren't so intent on hearing, seeing, and speaking the evil, you wouldn't have such a hard time being friendly. And incidentally, that's why you don't think anything of yourself. Because you're constantly fixated on your own evil, on the hearing and the seeing and speaking of your own evil. And why do you do that? Because you know that you can continue it. You have a fixation on your own evil. You're friendly with your habits. That's why you have them. You're on the same side of the issue as those things you drink or smoke or puff or whatever you do with them. You're friendly with those things. So God is saying here, the individual who's blind will be safe. He'll be friendly. Perfect also means to be at peace and to prosper, to make amends and to make others prosperous and to make peace. So you see, there's a lot of benefit in not hearing, seeing, or speaking evil of anybody, beginning with yourself. And let me tell you why it's so important to begin with yourself. You go ahead and you see the evil in you, speak about the evil in you, and hear the evil in you, and you will be down on you. You'll hate you. You'll abuse yourself with all your bad habits. You're abusing you because you hate you with a passion. And then Satan comes and says, huh? Hate yourself, huh? What are you doing there? Well, yeah, this is going to give me emphysema, but I can't stand it. This is going to give me a hangover and cancer. And this is going to come, but I can't stand me. I hate my guts. And then Satan says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thou lovest thyself. In this case, as thou hatest thyself. See, you can't love anybody differently than you love yourself. The word says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. You won't love him any more or any different than you love yourself. And quite frankly, based on some of the habits that I know are prevalent in this church, I don't particularly want you to love me. Because you're killing yourself. And you can't love me any different than you love yourself. So what becomes the task of the servant of God? Hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. Now, it's interesting how that has to happen. First, I have to show you. You've got to hear about it. You've got to see it. And we've got to speak it, confess it. And then once you get it off your chest, then you go home free. And it's my job to defend you then. If I could ever get you to get to that point. Some of you, it seems impossible. Now, let me tell you, it's important that you understand that hearing, seeing and speaking no evil, being blind in order to be perfect, will cause you to be safe. You know what the word safe means? To be in good health and sound condition, well preserved. Some of you people, you know, you're 24, 25 years old and you look like about 48 or 49. And then on Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings after the night before, you look like your grandma's grandma. You're not very well preserved. Now, I know that alcohol preserves some things, but it doesn't do much for people. Pickles, yes. Was never intended. See, people were never intended to be pickled. Did you know that? Or smoked either, for that matter. Beef jerky, without the why, and without the beef, just a jerk. See, you're not preserved the way God intended you to be preserved. So we try to find all these other ways. You know, smoked ham, pickle this, pickle that. That's not the way to do it. God says, I want you to be well preserved, in good health and sound condition. Well, what keeps me from that, Lord? You hear, speak, and see evil constantly. I could get you a job on Broadway as a Broadway critic and you'd be a millionaire in 1 year. You know what's wrong with everything. You don't know what to do about it, but so what? You know what's wrong. The word safe also means to be unharmed and whole. It means to be free from damage. See, all the organs, everything you have inside of you, they ought to be free from damage. You ought to be safe. Now, you thought people got sick for reasons of it's luck or chance or hereditary. It only is to the degree that if you see evil, think evil, and speak evil, you're not going to be free from damage very long. Now, talk yourself into an illness. Safe means to be free from damage, free from injury. Safe also means to be trustworthy. Safe means to become unable to cause trouble or damage. See, the person that sees, hears, and speaks no evil loses their ability to cause trouble or damage. Now, you can trust somebody like that, can't you? Because they no longer have the ability. Listen, if they can't hurt themselves, they can't hurt you. Watch out for the man or woman that's doing physical damage to themselves. You're next. Don't get too close to that person. They're doing damage to themselves. Listen, if they don't respect themselves, what makes you think they're going to have respect for you? And incidentally, isn't that the way you got in all those habits? Somebody slipped you a joint here free. Come on, have a drink on me, buddy. Let's just do this one. It's always that way. It's always that way. It never works any other way. It's people that have the ability to cause trouble and damage. Watch out for those. See, because you got to be safe. And how do you stay safe? Don't look, hear, and speak about their evil. That's my job. I'm insulated against that. It's not your job. Wives, don't be looking at your husbands or your children for that. That's my job. Because it'll cost you the perfection that God wants you to have. Perfect also means to prosper. Prosper means to succeed and thrive and grow in a vigorous way. Why aren't you growing as a Christian? Because you hear, see, and speak evil constantly. You have an obsession with it. And when you get tired of doing it on your own, you turn on the TV set and you watch somebody else and you say, oh, did you hear what JR did? Yeah, I heard what JR did. He got $8 zillion from dummies like you that buy the soap that he's printing while he goes on Hollywood and does all these things. Oh, did you think what JR did? Yeah, he's sitting at the beach or riding his Rolls Royce, and you thought that's all true. And you're thinking evil thoughts over some stupid program, and they're laughing all the way to the bank. But it gets you into a cycle of hearing, seeing, and thinking evil. That's all you do. And after a while, you start thinking, well, he talks a good show, but I wonder about Reuben. I wonder what he's doing. I'm going to tell you again. Whatever you suspect, the truth is worse. You'd be amazed at what I thought about today. Man. In between studying for the sermon, of course. I had to take my wings out and get them pressed twice. But I'm here anyway. And if God wanted a perfect man to speak it, then he would require perfect people to hear it. Listen, if I'm going to have to be perfect, then don't you dare listen until you become perfect. Well, we do. We'll sit here and mumble at each other. Throw darts. What do you want to do? If I've got to be perfect to say it, you've got to be perfect to hear it. And if we have to be perfect, then what's the sense of all this? There is none. It says God wants you to prosper. It's this thinking, hearing, and speaking evil. Someone wants to come and speak evil, don't hear it. You know, when you come and tell me about such and such, what's the first thing I'll tell you? We cannot help you by you understanding what's wrong with him. The only way you can be helped, let's talk about you. Let's figure out what's wrong with you. We can't help you by figuring out the other people. I'm not here to hear, think, and speak evil about somebody else. I will do it about you, though. But only to your face, and only after you've asked me. Other than that, you won't get...